Hi, I'm Flo Hale, and it's Arts Alive, etc. And here we are with part two with the wonderful Adam Crane. Now, I want to remind you again, please get your pencils and paper because I want you to write down his website. Adam, welcome back again. Thank you. And please give your website.
Yes, you can get it two ways. It's a non-for-profit foundation, and the website is mindfitnessfoundation.org, or you can also get it through mindfitnessfound.org.
Okay, now, would just everybody, we're going to repeat this.
www.mindfitnessfoundation.org. Or www.mindfitnessfound.org.
Great. And we'll get that in once again before we have to end this wonderful interview. But you've been talking about so many wonderful things, and this is an area that I'm really interested in but really don't know too much about. And, Adam, this is your interview, and I want you to take it anywhere you want to go. You know where we left off on the last interview with longevity and population growth all over the world and what is happening. So please pick it up anywhere you would like to.
Well, yeah, I guess what we had begun on the last talk was to say that we, the first three episodes of the webcast are devoted to looking at the very big picture, the three biggest challenges that mankind has to face, and we had begun to get into, or we got into a little bit to the issues around radical life extension, the explosion of the potential that we have in people right now who will live. Who really focus on enhancing the quality of their moment-to-moment life are already causing, without necessarily meaning to, a substantial increase in their life, and then the developments that are happening in science, both psychological, psychophysiological. You know, my career was as a psychophysiologist,
right,
and a biofeedback professional. The explosion that's happening in rejuvenation science and these kind of things is moving us, I say, inevitably towards dramatically increased length of life, a great spreading out of the middle years. Now, that's one of the challenges, and of course we began to get into some of the issues surrounding that, including population and economics and so forth, and we can talk about that for a long time, but probably it might be also useful to look at a couple of the other challenges. You know, the Atlantic Monthly, a very respected publication, had a cover article a while ago in which they said the world is facing a challenge that it's never faced before, which is too few dead people. and you know, there, but the longevity issue, the exploding not only quality of life, but the longevity of life is one of the most optimistic and beautiful things. When, you know, we won't do it right now, perhaps, but if you get into the economics of it, there is a direct correlation between increasing lifespan and increasing economic order, prosperity. For example, the lifespan since 1970 in the United States has increased over 5 years. That has added, according to one Nobel laureate, I believe his name is Fogels, that has added over $90 trillion to the United States economy that 5 years alone. Mm-hmm. And if you subtract from that all the costs attendant to people living older, you know, all the medical research,
sure,
everything else, it nets out to over $60 trillion additional to the economy. So what to, added to the American economy alone? And America is you know, one of our big political issues we're dealing with right now is that we're not doing anywhere near the level of job that we should be.
Mm-hmm.
We're much behind a number of European countries in these areas. But I thought, you know, part of looking at the biggest issues is that we must deal with the all of the truths of our time, all the real important issues, because and that includes the bad news too, or the scary news, shall we say?
Absolutely.
And so, episode two, we devote to existential threats to humanity. There have been only, strangely enough, four major papers written in recent times describing the existential threats, which are kind of the opposite of the longevity issue. You know, existential threats don't mean big wars. You know, like for there might be terrible things. You know, like if we had the something as bad as the Spanish flu again, you know,
right.
Hit us in 1918, killed my granddad at 41.
Wow.
If we had a Nazi style Reich, emerge, those are not really existential threats, because humanity could recover from an existential threat is something which could wipe humanity out either quickly or goes out with a bang, or over a period of time intelligent life could never recover from it, and it would just gradually go out in a whimper. This, by the way, almost happened 70,000 years ago.
Right.
There was a massive decrease in human, and there was a period of time when humans were getting so few that on Earth that the species could have become extinct. Now, John Leslie, a very respected futurist and scientist, calculates that there's a 50% chance of failure for humanity to survive this century. Sir Martin Rees, the Britain's astronomer royal, also figures about 50%. Richard Posner doesn't really give a calculation, but he warns that the situation is very dire. Nick Bostrom of the Institute for the Future of Humanity calculates we do not have less than a 20% chance of failure. Now, existential threats, when you look at existential threats, you know, you say, well, what is an existential threat? Well, an all-out nuclear war would be an existential threat, because although the war itself wouldn't kill everybody, the nuclear winter it might generate could. There are forms of plagues that could sweep the earth that would be so devastating that humanity couldn't recover from it.
Sure.
You know, the Black Plague, which was a completely natural plague, nothing that had been sort of souped up by scientists that want to develop a weapon of this type. But you know, the Black Plague alone reduced the population of Europe in many countries by over 50%, and did it several times over a period of several hundred years. And then there's the technology, the explosions. Some of the technology that is being developed has a very threatening downside. You know, nanotechnology, for example.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that probably the United States and or some other countries already have secret projects going on. I mean, I don't know this; they deny it. But I think my suspicion is that the secret projects are probably already going on, in which nanotechnology is being developed as a weapon. And aside from that, just the research on nanotechnology that we're doing for all the wonderful benefits that nanotechnology can bring could, in the laboratory, cause a form of self-replicating nanotechnology, which somehow gets out of the laboratory. And in fact, statistically, most of the people that are seriously looking at this whole issue of these existential threats believe that, statistically speaking, the biggest threat we've got right now is not all-out nuclear war. Knock wood.
Yeah,
knocking
please.
Wood here.
I'm knocking on my head as you speak.
Yeah, me too. is the nanotechnology, because nanotechnology is much easier to develop than it is to control, and of course there are the whole giant hadron collider being developed, you know, in Switzerland right now. That whole project has been, I understand, aspects of it. Put on a temporary hold as the world enters into a huge debate, because one of the jobs one of the reasons we've created the Hadron Collider is to try to make very, very small black holes. Well, there are some scientists that believe now Nick Bostrom and some of the people that have looked at the statistics on this say that statistically the probability is very, very small. But statistically, it's small, but theoretically, one of these black holes could decide it doesn't want to disappear and just start eating and sink to the bottom of the earth and eat the earth from the inside out.
That's right. That's very, very true. I mean, I love science.
Scientists are saying, before we start playing around with making black holes, even though they're very small, maybe we ought to wait a little bit and learn a little bit more. And then there are things which challenges which are not of threats that are not of our making. For example, many people say, well, you know, why are we deciding to spend vast amounts of money building a colony on the moon? And the answer that most people think is, well, the reason is that we need to build a colony on the moon because in order to really begin to move man to Mars, we're going to need a different type of rocket. So
right.
You'll have one type of rocket that goes to the moon, and then a much different and probably much bigger type of rocket, which can travel and carry a much bigger load
to Mars.
To Mars.
Yeah.
But the bigger reason that we're doing it is because we want to build a special type of telescopic array on the dark side of the moon inside a big crater, because we can see, we can track asteroids much, much easier from there. And there are certain types or classes of asteroids which we can't see right now, because of the light, the way the sunlight is configured and so forth,
sure.
Which we will be able to see there. And there is a major scientific movement underway to be able to track these asteroids and to develop the technology necessary that if we see one moving on, you know, an asteroid that's more than a half mile wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the statistics are on any given day. I don't want to quote the statistics; they're too scary.
But the point
is that an asteroid over a half mile wide could bring about also the equivalent of nuclear winter.
That's right.
So the whole issue of how does mankind deal with these existential threats.
Well, you know what pleases me is that, I mean, I happen to be a firm believer that somewhere out there in our vast universe, which the theory is, some scientists say it's not expanding, but let's say that it is, you know, continuously expanding, that somewhere out there, there is life someplace else. And the thing that pleased me was that about, oh, just about maybe about a month ago, the Pope, somebody asked the Pope that question about life someplace else, and he said, there's nothing wrong with believing that there is life on other planets. Why not? You know, the universe is just a marvelous place, and there are so many wonderful things happening out there, and it's right that scientists keep looking and looking and looking.
Well, I think it's not only right, but it's overwhelming science. I think the more we learn about life, the more we see that it is so robust. For example, they're discovering all kinds of astonishing forms of life in the great depths of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Only a very, very tiny part of the ocean has been researched, and where nobody thought life could possibly exist, we're
sure
discovering it. So I think that the further we go into this whole issue, the more we see that life, I personally feel, and a number of the type of people that I pay a lot of attention to, that the whole issue of life and consciousness, that the two things are really two different aspects of each other.
Mm-hmm. Explain that.
And that life is not just some kind of mechanical, organic thing that occurs under certain conditions.
Right.
That there is some, John Horgan said, look, the most important science of our time is not particle physics, it's the science of consciousness. And
mm-hmm.
this has been formally true ever since the Nobel laureate Sir Francis Crick declared it true in the 70s, said that Horgan says, look, compare, and people think, well, no, quantum physics is the most important thing. Well, Horgan says, compared to the science of consciousness, quantum physics is a 10-piece jigsaw puzzle of Snow White. So there is this. In fact, I think we're about to start hearing, and you will be reading it in the New York Times science section, I predict, within some short period of time, that light, life, you know, actual life as defined by our science now, and consciousness are all intimately entangled, as they say in quantum physics terms.
Sure. Did you, I think you and I talked about this years ago. We were sitting around your home in Assening, and I had mentioned the book, The Holographic Universe.
Oh, yeah.
It's very hard to find a copy of that, but that book is so fascinating.
Well, yeah, that's another one of the extraordinary things that's happened in our time. Remember, our focus is not, we love to do the science, we love to research the science, it's just so exciting and so beautiful, but our focus is more on the practical strategies that the ordinary human being, that are laying like jewels all around on the ground that are not noticed, the practical that are just there to be picked up, this low-hanging fruit of strategies and methods and principles that the ordinary human being can apply to enormously increase the quality of life and consciousness. And one of the reasons that that's so is that many extraordinary, brilliant scientists. Really, Einstein was one of them himself, and in contemporary times, Brian Greene, and of course, mm-hmm. one of my mentors and my dear friend, the late great Dave Baum, and others, decided that rather than just do papers and publish them in journals that only scientists read, they were going to spend a tremendous amount of their life and their life energy and their life force developing ways to make the ordinary human being aware of this extraordinary, exciting, and mostly good news of science. And the book, The Holographic Universe, was an example of that. And there are, of course, by now, literally thousands of books out there, and many of them free. I mean, you can get them on the internet for free, and if not, they don't cost very much. That allow us to find out about this thing. So it's a wonderful time.
It is. It's just so fascinating. Well, I'm at an age where I don't think I'm going to live to be 150. I don't fall into that category. But I just...
Well, I don't know. you're doing an awful good job.
But the thing is that it is so exciting. I intend to come back wherever I am after I leave this mortal world. I am going to come back because I want to see what's going on.
Yeah, that's what my wife Dagny has said.
Oh, I know. She and I have talked about it.
Can't wait to come back, yeah. Of course, I'm trying to get her not to go in the first place, and she's doing as good a job as anybody I know.
Oh, I know. Just really fantastic. But this is such an exciting time to live in, and I'm just wondering if the young kids today realize the time that they're living in. And how exciting
I think so.
It is.
I think that the more, you know, I spend a great deal of my time. I'll give a plug for a website that some of your people might not have discovered. It's called TED Talks, and it's the organization that uses the initials TED, which stands for Technology, Education, and Design. And these talks are free. And you can get them and just listen to them if you've got broadband. And, the more you hang out with the young people that are the good news, and that show up in conferences, and the more I feel that the world is in good hands. The young people are not this kind of old habit that that's been going on, was going on in my time and the time before, that the young people of today are spoiled and ruining themselves and stuff. That's the kind of stuff that we mentioned before, a lot of the news organizations put out because it's titillating and it sells product. The real good news isn't really being told, and I think what I see are young people that are brilliant, that are more intelligent, better educated than any of us ever could have hoped to have been, and that are on fire.
Right.
To transform the world, to transform the consciousness of the world, to bring in a whole new manner of thinking, to resolve the huge problems facing us with global warming and stuff. And they're on fire, and they're laying their lives on the line, and so I think...
Do you know, Adam, that I can't believe our second segment is... You know, we could go on for the three more hours. You know, this is just absolutely fascinating. And I'm hoping that within next season at some point, we can have you back and really pick up where we've left off. And Adam, when we're finished, please don't get off the line. Would you stay on the line for another minute, please?
Sure.
Okay, now remember again, please. Green County Council on the Arts, 398 Main Street in Catskill. Go. You're going to love the show there. And Stageworks, a great musical there. 828-7843. Just say, hey, Flo Hale told me to call, and there are discount tickets and everything. You're going to have a good time. I laughed from the moment I sat down and was still laughing when I left the theater. And it's just fantastic. And Columbia County has some great things going on Warren Street. They're going to have the dogs over there. Catskill has the wonderful cats, and they're going to be going up for auction in September at some point. So there are so many wonderful things going on all over Columbia County, Greene County, and we want all of you to pay us a visit. So this is Flo Hale saying bye-bye for now, and please do take care of yourself. Bye-bye.